I think hassle is no different than friction or effort, other than just slightly tweaking the lens of it. And here's how I would explain that.
Okay.
So if we're focused on friction or effort, okay, we could say, okay, we have 5 points in the customer experience where we've identified significant friction.
Yeah.
Hassle is, okay, this one gets 70% of our bad surveys. Hassle is, this is the one that's really ticking people off. This is the one we need to address first. This is the one that's really making people upset. Unfortunately, the other one, the other two are the easiest, or the other four are the easiest to fix. That's how it always works, right? But that's where I think, you know, I mean, you can sort of make it very formal and say, well, you know, based on survey data and all that. But when you look at it, it's what's really ticking off your customers, what's really making their experience bad.
Helping you create loyal customers and loyal employees, all through the power of simplicity. This is the Simple Brand Podcast, now heard around the world, including Barcelona, Spain. I'm your host, Matt Lyles, and this week I'm talking with my customer service hero, Adam Toporek. Adam's an internationally recognized customer experience expert. He's a keynote speaker. He's a customer service trainer who helps organizations transform their relationships with their customers through better strategy, better training, and better communication. He's the founder of Customers That Stick, and he's the former co-host of the Crack the Customer podcast. And he's the author of the best-selling customer service book, Be Your Customer's Hero. Adam and I discuss all his lessons around helping your customer-facing teams become more confident, more in control, and more successful in creating happy, loyal customers, the customers that see your brand as their hero. So here it is. Here's my interview with Adam Toporek.
Hi, Adam. Welcome to the show.
Matt, how are you? It's great to be here. Thanks so much for having me.
Yeah, well, I'm excited you're here. I'm excited to dig in and talk about your lessons around being your customer's hero.
Awesome. Well, we can always stand to be more heroic to our customers, right?
Absolutely. I mean, yes, we can. And, you know, I'm a big fan of comics. I'm a big fan of superheroes and superhero movies. And when I hear the term hero, I think of someone who's doing something like really significant, you know, really something really outstanding and saving the world, saving the day. And so if I try to apply that to the experiences we deliver to our customers, that feels like it can be a little bit intimidating. So am I able to actually be a customer hero every day?
Absolutely. And yeah, that's actually part of be your customer's hero. I always point the wrong way. There we go. I got to look in the mirror.
Be your customer's hero
is, you know, I talk about that in the book, which is, it is not about over the top acts of service. It's not about all of these types of service that these viral stories we see that are not repeatable, that are not scalable. So in Be Your Customer's Hero, I actually break down three parts of what we call hero class customer service. And they're pretty simple. One, meet and when possible, exceed expectations. Two, deliver frictionless, hassle-free experiences, which I know we're going to talk about today.
Yeah.
And three, and this is one of the hardest things, is do both of the above consistently. Now, I will say, since I published Hero, I have changed some of what I do. I have learned more, I have added more, and I would actually add a fourth part to that.
Oh, what's that?
I have a big focus on customer emotion now, and I would add, create a positive, emotionally resonant experience.
And I think a lot more people are talking about that and recognizing the value of focusing on customer emotions today.
Well, absolutely. So I think the research that we have today is pretty clear that emotion, particularly peak emotion, strong emotion, is the most important determinant of experience results. Okay. And if you think about it this way, think about, you go to a restaurant, you've got your, we were talking about food, you know, just a few minutes ago, you go to your favorite restaurant there, you know, in your town, you go there once a week and it's good. Let's not even say your favorite restaurant. Let's say your corner restaurant. It's just easy. The food's good. And you have a nice experience. They treat you well, but nothing special. Nothing really stands out. And then after, on the 20th time you go there, you have a horrible experience. The waiter is rude. The food is cold. When you send the food back, it comes back bad and you get an attitude. You are upset. You know, whoever you're with is upset.
Yeah.
Out of those 20 experiences, which one are you going to remember?
Oh, that last one with that negative experience. Yeah.
And that's the problem, because you had a peak emotion. You had a strong emotion, right? You had something that is going to resonate. That's how our brains are wired. So, you know, we have this attitude that like, oh, wow, you know, we've done a really good job. We've done a really good job. And why are they so upset? This is one mess up. Well, it depends on the situation. If it's a small mess up, you probably are okay. Yeah. Assuming we're dealing with the 98% of our customers that are somewhat rational. Right. But if you really walk into a wall, if you really create a bad experience, particularly if you deliver an interpersonal interaction that is negative, because we're very wired to respond to human beings, that is going to stay. And that's why you can lose a customer so quickly. So that I would change that. You know, I would go meet when possible, exceed expectations, deliver frictionless experiences, do it consistently. If I could go back and write here again, one of the things I would change is add that emotional layer.
Wow. And when it comes to that negative experience, you know, what you were talking about earlier was if it's small enough, it's definitely not meeting expectations, but not necessarily significant. My thought is, if we've been there 19 times before and have had a consistently pretty good experience, and then on that 20th time get something that just slightly doesn't meet expectations, I think a lot of times the rational customer would just see that as an anomaly. You know what? Yeah, this was not good. Maybe this was a new employee, or maybe they're having a bad day. You know what? No big deal.
100%. And obviously personality is going to affect this, but you know, Steve Jobs spoke about that. He called it brand deposit. Like you put a little deposit in the bank. And I think more formally, like academia, they call it brand equity. So you put a deposit in the bank, put a deposit, all these little interactions that may not stand out, may not amaze someone, they buy you goodwill, which is why those first impressions are so important. Your first interaction with the customer is incredibly crucial, because you don't have that. This is okay. If you mess up the first interaction, it does matter more than if you mess up the 20th. And to your point, yeah. So if you build up that brand equity, you build up those brand deposits, you've got something in the account to draw down a little bit.
Yeah.
Right. And so I think that's a helpful way to look at it. And it's very true. It all intensity, one of the things that matters when we talk about emotion is intensity.
What do you mean by that? What do you mean by intensity?
Okay, so there's being mildly annoyed and there's being enraged. Okay. Those are two very different emotions.
There you go.
I'm like, okay, I'm frustrated, I'm rushing, and this company just made me fill out a form I don't have time to deal with.
Yeah.
Okay, but fine, but they're a good company. I get it. Okay, it's a doctor's office. I get it. But they should have sent it to me a week ago, not when I have 30 minutes. Okay, fine. Enraged is I get there. They won't see me because I didn't send the form in the day before. They canceled my appointment and I'm livid. I've been waiting 2 months to see this doctor, whatever. Those reactions are markedly different. Those emotions are markedly different. It's just like when somebody makes you really upset, it stays with your brain. And that's a part of what we know now. This is part of the research we have around emotion, around psychology and neuroscience. Is we know that our brains are, you know, wired for the savanna millions of years ago, right? Tens of thousands of years ago. And, you know, that we link up pain, really particularly intense pain, right? We're designed to remember peak emotions. We're designed to imprint that. And it's why it's very hard to overcome that.
Well, and when we think about it that way, it seems like we've got all those previous experiences from every other brand that we've had that kind of play into that and maybe are in our subconscious. So whether we've had, you know, great experiences with brands in the past, poor experiences with brands in the past, you write about this in that there's triggers, that there's like different triggers based on the situation that trigger all these negative experiences that we've had in the past. And then like when we get into a situation, it just intensifies based on the trigger. Can you walk through some of those?
Oh, absolutely. So, you know, this idea of triggers, I like to use the framework of a personal trigger first. So a personal trigger is like, okay, I used to have a noisy neighbor above me in college who just jammed the music all the time, you know, just didn't care about anything. And now if I hear, this is not me, I'm just personalizing the example. Yeah. But now within 2 minutes, if somebody above me, you know, in a hotel plays noise, even a little bit, like it's a trigger, right? I'm just automatically like, what? Right. That's what a personal trigger is. We have these experiences. Maybe you know, somebody used to say something to us all the time. We hear that phrase, even though it was anodyne, you know, coming from another person, it triggers us. So the seven service triggers are about more general triggers, not personalized triggers. These are triggers that, you know, in analyzing all my experience in customer service and the research, I found pretty much go across all industries. And so there are common triggers, and the idea of understanding triggers is one, if we understand common triggers, we can address them in our experience design.
Okay.
And then there's the personalization aspect, which is understanding our customers' personal triggers when possible. So
nice.
You want to go through the seven service triggers? We talk about them a little bit.
Yeah, please.
All right, love it. So being ignored and being abandoned are the first two, and I'll go ahead and link those up. So there's a slight difference between them. Being ignored means it's the first interaction, not necessarily the first time you've interacted with the brand, but you walk in the store, you call,
right,
and nobody answers. Nobody says hi. Nobody responds to the email. That's being ignored. Being abandoned is where we've started some sort of process or transaction, and you get dropped in the middle of it. Okay, I will get back to you. I have to ask my manager. Or something. That email never comes, right? That phone call never comes. That's being abandoned. And you can see just off these first two, I mean, you've had both of these happen, of course, to you. We all have. These are triggers depending on the person and the industry and their experience, but they're very common. We know as service providers, we want to avoid these. So there's being hassled too. So being hassled is, I speak about customer hassle as opposed to friction or effort. So we all talk about friction or effort in this industry in CX. So the reason I speak about hassle instead of friction or effort in general is because of what I said earlier, emotion and its importance in customer experience. Friction or effort is sort of the mechanistic thing that is happening.
Okay.
Hassle is our emotional reaction to that friction or effort, how we feel. Hassle is a feeling. So it's a fine line. It's, you know, we're pretty much talking about similar things from a design standpoint, but I like to focus on the hassle lens because it is about the reaction, it is about how they feel. There will always be friction in a customer experience. I know there's a big, theme, one of your big themes is simple, right? And to simplify the experience. That's great. We can make it as frictionless as possible, right? I mean, until we can read minds and there's always going to be some element of small friction, even if it's tiny.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, and so I'm curious, when I think of friction, when I think of effort, a lot of times I think of maybe the actual process itself, what we've put into the design of the customer experience. When it comes to hassle, do you think that that is more in the employee's control?
I think hassle is no different than friction or effort, other than just slightly tweaking the lens of it. And here's how I would explain that.
Okay.
So if we're focused on friction or effort, we could say, okay, we have 5 points in the customer experience where we've identified significant friction.
Yeah.
Hassle is, okay, this one gets 70% of our bad surveys. Hassle is, this is the one that's really ticking people off. This is the one we need to address first. This is the one that's really making people upset. Unfortunately, the other two are the easiest, or the other four, the easiest to fix. That's how it always works, right? But that's where I think, you know, I mean, you can sort of make it very formal and say, well, you know, based on survey data and all that. But when you look at it, it's what's really ticking off your customers, what's really making their experience bad. So the friction is what's happening. Okay, well, we're asking them to fill out a form. We're not empowering our employees, which is a huge part of this, not empowering our employees to address this issue that is happening at this point in the customer journey. And now we're getting bad surveys, right? We're getting problems. So that's the only way I would differentiate it, is really focusing on that emotion. And when you're addressing the touch point, I find the hassle lens is also important, because we can say, okay, let's say it's a form. I'm just going to keep using that example. But yeah, there's a form that's just ridiculous and seemingly unnecessary to the customer. And when we look at it, we say, okay, well, what's making them upset? Why is it making them upset? And how do we fix this touch point and still, let's say, cover our legal bases or cover our compliance bases or whatever we need to do? We need this information. And I think looking through how people are upset and why they're upset is better than just saying, well, let's just make it as easy as possible, because that can help us address the touch point.
Gotcha. Okay. Yeah. So like being able to understand the emotions behind that specific interaction and how intense is the emotion around it, and recognizing, okay, if you look at the intensity of the emotion, that the hassle that a customer is feeling at each of these different points, if we tackle this one's going to get us the biggest bang, the biggest return on customer emotion.
Exactly. And even if we're saying that form example, when we dig in, we find out that what's really ticking them off is not the form. It's the fact that one step earlier, they gave us 80%, had to give us 80% of that information.
Right.
And now they're having to do it again. And I've had this as a customer. Like I don't know if you get these things from your doctors once in a while. Check in on your phone or online. I quit doing it. I never do it anymore, because every time I did it, when I got to the office, they made me do it again.
Yeah, still got to check in.
So I just stopped. What was the point? Exactly. But yeah, that's where digging in and taking that lens of why are they upset? What is bothering them? It can really be helpful, I think.
Maybe with the doctor's office, maybe the intent behind that was, okay, what can we do to increase their blood pressure right before they get in so that we can measure their blood pressure and then tell them, hey, here's more things you have to do to improve this.
They're generating demand. Exactly.
That's it.
I love that.
So what can we do to create a more hassle-free experience?
So one, you've got to look for those pressure points or pain points in the experience, but there are a few places we can look that, again, just like the service triggers are sort of common triggers, well, there's common sources of hassle.
Okay.
One, technology. Technology is sort of the double-edged sword of hassle, because it can be the thing that eliminates it.
Yeah.
Or the thing that creates it.
Yeah.
It really just depends. But you always have to keep that in mind. And that comes down to, one, is the technology up to date? I know you had Jay Baer on the podcast talking about speed, right?
Yeah.
And how responsive is the technology? How responsive is the company, either automatically through AI or through computer generated responses, or through the human backstop to the technology? Is it up to date? Does it work with different systems? The whole bit, right? I mean, how many companies launched an app, 5, 7, 10 years ago and haven't, didn't get adoption, but they sort of kept it around, et cetera.
Oh, yeah. Well, and then even just behind the scenes, like not even seeing the apps, how many companies are still hindered by decades old legacy systems that are actually hindering their employees from getting their job done?
Well, 100%. I mean, to me, hassle is a CX and EX topic.
Yeah.
And they are very much linked and related, right? I mean, because if we put our employees through hassle, that is almost always manifested in the customer journey, almost always manifested in the customer experience. So yeah, you've got these legacy systems, you've got in the bigger companies, different systems, right? Yeah. The PR division or the marketing division's got something that doesn't talk with operations, that doesn't talk with the,
they're not connected.
Yeah, and that's difficult. And you know, and the problem is, you know, turning that super tanker around when you do have a large enterprise, and this is an advantage for small businesses, for smaller enterprises, it's very difficult. By the time you figure out your tech stack, by the time you figure out the investment and the budgeting and all that, the technology's already moved on. You know, yeah. It can be a really challenging thing for scaled companies. So technology is one of them. Other one, I think you alluded to already, is policies and procedures.
Yep.
Right. We just have these outdated policies and procedures so often. You know, what happens, I actually came up with a term for this years ago called rule accretion, which is, you know, yeah. All things being equal, the natural tendency of an organization is to accrete, to accumulate more rules and more processes.
Right.
Right. Because we never get rid of them, right? Something happens. Okay, we had this drama. We were in the news for something, whatever. Okay, well, we need 7 different backstops to make sure that never happens again. And what happens over the time, particularly these one-off problems, like a customer got really mad or threatened to sue over this. Okay, well, it's just a crazy customer. Once in a while, that happens.
Yeah.
And now, you know, you really want to be careful creating rules or policies that affect, you know, 98, 99% of your customers to prevent the 1%, 2%. And this is what happens with these policies and procedures. A lot of times they're just outdated. They don't serve what we intended in the first place, or that reason is no longer there. So I do always recommend, and it's hard because everyone's busy, no one has enough staff, the whole bit, but really trying to assess your policies and procedures every year, maybe every 6 months if you even can. But probably not going to happen. But really taking a look, like really, and here's the thing you can do that is so powerful. Just ask your front line.
Yeah.
They know where the pain points are. They know where they're being hindered and they're dealing with it, right? They're like, I can't do this for this customer. I am asked 5 times a week to do this for this customer, for our customers, and I can't.
Yeah, it's their hands are tied a lot of times by... Sometimes it is by the technology. Sometimes it is by the policies and procedures in place. And you know, going back to what, rule accretion, I love that term.
That's really wonky, yeah.
But it's so true in that a lot of times, like we will create rules. They'll be in place, and then we never think. You know, well, I mean, if it's in place, then there's no reason to get rid of it. But then if another challenge or another issue comes up, well, how do we solve that? Oh, we solve by adding another rule. I don't know if you're familiar with Lisa Bodell, but she focuses around like internal organizational simplicity. Right. And she has people walk through exercise that she calls kill stupid rules. Have your people go through, you know, on a regular basis. I mean, you know, hopefully every 6 months or at least every 12 months. Okay, what are the stupid rules that are in place that are preventing us from getting our job done? And how can we kill those rules? You know, everybody throw out your ideas on what rules can be killed. Now, is there a real valid reason for having those rules in place? If not, it's okay to kill them.
Right. And if you can't kill them, can we change them or modernize them? Or
right?
For example, I'll go back to a form, but this is more about information and data, right? Okay, we need to have this information. Well, we have the information. Can we pre-fill out the form and have them just correct anything?
Okay. Right.
And that's not necessarily a rule, but yeah, I mean, there's so many ways to skin the cat. We can say, if we can't change it, okay, the lawyers won't budge. We have to do this, or we have to be careful of this. And that happens, right? There's compliance, there's HR, there's lawyers. How do we make it as simple as possible? How do we not make it a hassle point? So, you know, you don't always have to kill the rule. I think we start there. If you can get rid of it, get rid of it.
Correct.
But if you can't, okay, how do we make it as customer friendly and as frictionless, effortless as possible?
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, when it comes to any sort of compliance, whether it's with legal or whoever else, it's like, it's understanding, okay, here's the end goal. I recognize that here's the end compliance goal. Now, how can we adjust the tactics of achieving that goal while still making it hassle-free for the customer?
Exactly. That's a perfect way to look at it. I love it.
Hooray.
Cool. All right. So let's see. We're talking about hassle. So the fourth service trigger sort of actually relates to hassle, even though it's a different service trigger. The fourth service trigger is being faced with incompetence. And one of the biggest sources of hassle for those experiences that have a human element is a lack of adequate training of the team.
Okay.
That is, that's one of the things we do. So I do have a dog in this hunt, but training is hugely important. And you know, what's interesting is it's becoming more important. It's ironic, but to me, it's actually becoming more important now. And we're all talking about AI. We're all talking about the robots taking service jobs, right? But what's going to happen is they're going to take the simpler interactions off the table.
Yeah.
And those interactions that are left will be more complex, will be more difficult to manage, will be beyond the capabilities of computers to handle. And it will be more important than ever that the human component goes well and is emotionally positive, and that when they finally get through, Sally, the FedEx robot or whatever brand, right? When they get to a human, that human knows what to do. That human knows what they are empowered to do, has the training, the communication skills, the soft skills to be able to have a good conversation, to manage negative emotion. So training is actually a huge part for those experiences that have a human element, a huge part of the friction. Because how many times have you had, I don't know, let me check with my manager. I got to look and see where that's at, right? Yeah. That's hassle.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. So then how do you solve for that on an ongoing basis?
Well, it evolves, obviously, but training, I love the word ongoing because that's what training should be, ongoing. There's no, when we have discovery calls with potential clients, it's like, if you want a one and done training, we will do that for you. But let me tell you what that is. Okay.
Yeah.
There's a few things we can achieve with that, but training is not one of them. We can generally open minds and give a few techniques. But training must be sustained, and there's different things we do, and there's different things the companies can do themselves. So I think you have to identify what is the role, what are the skills they need. And by the way, when I say identify, that means talk to your people and ask them.
Yeah.
Okay. Use your data, use your
novel
research.
Concept.
Yeah. Use your own brain, but ask them. They know. They may not see the whole picture, right? They don't see what you see as a leader. They may not understand that, the computer gods take 5 years to fix things. So we're going to have to work around that.
Yeah.
Right. But ask them, because if you can understand what the job needs to be, you can understand what the expectations of customers are when they interact with this particular job position or that particular job position, you can build a training program, but just training reinforcement, right? You don't have to be training every day. I mean, I'm a training company, but you don't have to be training every day. You can do some training, put it in a window, but then you reinforce it. You're reinforcing it in huddles. You're reinforcing it with, a couple of emails a week with some quotes, or even better yet, an internal story about a success. Hey, John had this situation with this customer. He went out of his way. He did this, he did that, and sharing those stories. So, there's a lot of emphasis now because no one has time, no one has resources anymore.
Right.
We're actually releasing really short trainings now, but on micro learning.
Yeah.
1 minute, 2 minute, little hits along the way, always trying to keep customer experience and those skills top of mind. So it doesn't have to, I think executives or leaders get scared with like ongoing training. Well, they're thinking like, okay, I need to take my people off the schedule, put them in a room for an hour every day. No, that's not that.
And it sounds like as we have more of a focus on the technology and AI that might be able to solve and help walk through the actual steps of those common problems, then it sounds like there's more of that quick, micro, inspirational training to help solve for those problems that need more of like that human touch.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think it depends on the nature of your team. So for instance, if I am going to train on customer service, sometimes I'll get a sales team. And they're like, hey, yeah. we need to improve our customer experience. It's a little too much churn and burn, a little too much, you know, sell. But if I've got 15-year sales veterans in there, I'm going to have a completely different training than I'm going to have if it's like, you know, new frontline teams that are, right. you know, a lot of them are 18, 20 years old or, you know, one of their first, second, third job, right? So it's just a different vibe. And you know, to your point, the training has to be adapted to the team. So you may need a deeper training, a little more formal training, depending on the skill set that the team comes in with. Right. There's okay. always new stuff, I think, particularly if you use modern training like we do or some other organizations do, which is based in psychology and neuroscience. And it's not just, well, greet the customer and smile. And I mean, that's all important. It's a, yeah. Yeah, we say that too, but we say it for five yeah. seconds and then move on to the stuff you don't know.
Yeah.
I think if you basis. Do that, you can add those micro trainings in, right? Like that's, you do some good training and then you just reinforce along the way.
Gotcha. And I think there's something to be said for what you were talking about earlier is for leaders to find, source, and curate all those success stories, those real life success stories of how another employee over here helped solve this problem, and here's how they did it.
There is literally, I mean, you've got to have the basic skills. I don't say there's nothing more powerful because they've got to have the skills to understand the stories and to do it themselves, but
right.
As far as reinforcement, as far as inspiration and motivation, as far as keeping top, there is probably nothing more important than internal success stories. It is so powerful on a few levels. One, people are competitive, right? And yeah. Let's face it. I mean,
that's right.
We could try to ignore it, but people are competitive. They're like, oh, wow, they really wowed that customer. Yeah. You know, but also because it shows them, hey, I can do this too. This is not... like some guy that speaks on stages and comes in and says, oh, this is easy, right? And like, okay, that's been doing it for 30 years. I mean, that's fine, but that gives them that extra boost of confidence. That's like, hey, I know Sally. I was sitting with her at lunch yesterday, and if yeah. she can do it, I can do it.
Yeah, this is not just some vague aspirational story. This is a real concrete story of a real person that some of you actually know. That means you can do it too.
Exactly. That's so powerful. It's incredible.
Well, so one of the things that we were talking about a moment ago is how employees can be hindered, you know, hindered by their policies and procedures, hindered by technology. The opposite of being hindered is being empowered. So how does empowerment play into delivering hassle-free experiences?
That's so important. So empowerment is one of my big themes right now. I'm really focused on it. So empowerment's very interesting. One thing is people tend to be on two extremes with empowerment. They're either scared of it or people like in our industry, the experts tend to just talk about it very pie in the sky. Like it will solve all your problems. Just trust your employees and they will all do the right thing at the right time. And you know, the employee experience will be wonderful and the customer experience will be wonderful and never shall you meet reality. I actually look at it, and you're probably not going to hear anybody else in our industry say this. To me, empowerment is a risk reward decision. It is that, I mean, it's not sexy. It's not, you know, all fluffy. That's what it is. Right. And my example is if you own a huge big box retailer, you are not going to give the person who works your cash register ability to wire transfer money from the company account. Right?
Right.
Okay. Yeah. It's an extreme example, but the point is there are always limits to empowerment.
There you go.
And so empowerment should always be viewed in the context of what is necessary for the role. What can help this role specifically improve the customer experience and simultaneously improve the employee experience? So it truly is a risk-reward decision. So for example, and you can base it on customer lifetime value as well. And I'll give you two examples I love here.
Yeah.
So Starbucks, we all know Starbucks.
Right.
What happens when they mess up your drink and you tell them they've messed up your drink? Do they argue with you? Do they fight with you?
No, they just make you a new drink, right?
They just make you a new drink and they don't. I mean, if they're doing what they were trained, they don't say a word. They don't say, oh, well, I heard you said... Right. They might say, okay, I'm sorry, I heard you wrong or something, but they don't give you any kind of, you know, back talk or feedback like that.
Yeah.
Why? Now, this estimate is from a blog and it's not official, but it's because The customer lifetime value of a Starbucks customer is supposedly estimated at around $14,000. That was pre-inflation, so it's probably more now.
I think that adds up. Yeah.
Right. Yeah, exactly. I'm looking, not on mine. I've got to be at least triple that by now between me and my wife. But here's the thing. They're not going to tick you off for a cup of coffee that costs 50 cents.
Right.
Why? Why would they? If your lifetime value to that company, not to mention, that's hard lifetime value of you as a customer. That is not even your word of mouth value, both positive and negative, and all of those aspects. So why are they going to tick you off for 50 cents?
Yeah.
Now, I've got one of the most popular blog posts on my blog is the Ritz-Carlton's $2,000 rule. So the Ritz-Carlton, So the Ritz-Carlton is famous for anybody, even a janitor, can spend up to $2,000 without a manager's permission, without any type of sign-off to help a customer. But here's the thing. If you look at it through the perspective of customer lifetime value, that's the same thing as Starbucks 50 cents, because the customer lifetime value of a Ritz-Carlton customer is about $250,000. So Starbucks is not going to tick you off for a 50 cent cup of coffee and their cost, not ours. Ritz-Carlton is not going to tick you off for a hotel room that costs them a couple $100 a night or whatever it may be. It's just not going to happen. So when you look at empowerment, use that lens. Think about it as risk and reward. Like, what if I have a small business, if I have a small restaurant, maybe everybody's empowered up to $50. Whatever, right? You got to set limits, right? You don't just open up the store and there may be, a table of 12 is ticked off. We don't know if they're trying to scam us. Okay, maybe it's time to bring the manager in.
Yeah.
But loosen it up a little bit, not just like an appetizer. It's like, okay, the thing is, test it. Run it for a month. You're not going to go, if you have a small restaurant, you are not going to go broke empowering your team for a month to solve customer issues for $50, just for example. Okay. So test it and then tweak it at the end of the month. Evaluate it. Right.
Well, I think too many leaders have that fear that once I open the door to empowerment, I can never close the door and I can't even adjust the door again. It's just wide open and now we can never go back.
Exactly. And that's where it gets tricky, because it is all based in fear.
Yeah.
Right. Now here's the thing. Some of that fear is actually valid, right? Because a lot of times when we see a viral story about a company that went bad, oftentimes it was an employee who did something stupid, gross, or completely negligent. So it does happen, and there is a valid fear, but you've got to overcome that fear and say, what are the requirements of the customer experience? Why are we restricting this? What is truly the downside, right? And to me, financial empowerment is the easiest empowerment. You can pick a number, a refund, right? Or a cup of coffee or anything like that. That's actually the easy stuff. Things that may have some slight liability implications, admitting somebody's wrong in certain cases, some things like that. That's where it gets trickier too. Like empowering, things maybe in a B2B situation where we're talking about, shipping and contracts and, all that kind of stuff. That can get actually a lot trickier. So you've got to really just get rid of the fear. And like I said, that's why one of the reasons I like that sort of perspective of a risk reward decision is that just puts fear aside. This is a business decision. This is a risk reward analysis. What do we need? What will help our team? What's the win? To me, so I'll say this, customer experience is the win-win-win, literally. Empowerment is the win-win-win of customer experience.
Right.
Team wins, customer wins, company and management wins.
That's it. Really. Yeah. And then looking at that financial piece, the risk reward, you've got the customer value on one side. On the other side, I think you've also got, if you're measuring your operational efficiency as well. So if you look at the Starbucks example, if you think of most every Starbucks like that I see, there's always a line of people, at least 10 people in the store. There's always a line of cars wrapped around the building. If you think about the amount of time that it takes for one of the baristas to have to interact with the employee, and if you're arguing back and forth about whether who was right or who was wrong, that amount of time not serving the other customers, there's a cost to that as well. So it's like, you know what? Really quickly, it's, you know, it will take me no time at all to just make another cup of coffee for you so that they're on our way and our time can get back to the other customers at hand.
You're on it. That is it. I mean, that is you. There is, to me, there's no greater return on investment in customer experience than preventing a problem. Okay.
Yeah.
Prevention is literally the number one, the greatest ROI you will ever see. Any technology you invest in, whatever it may be, the greatest ROI is always preventing problems from escalating. So if you're creating problems in your example downstream, well, you're doing the opposite of that, right? And but if you're preventing problems, if you're just like, here's your new cup of coffee, one, preventing the issue with that customer, and to your point, preventing the sort of opportunity to create more issues downstream as well, because that all of that stuff is as soon as a customer issue has to go to another level, it immediately depends on the issue, of course, but so many times it already costs more than what it would have been to empower the team in the first place, particularly when you're talking about a cup of coffee or something, or a restaurant meal or whatever it may be. Now, there are other situations where, like, you know, if you're selling a $250,000 piece of equipment,
of course,
that's going to be a different discussion. But that's the thing. So, yeah, to your point, that's a great lens on it.
Yeah. And that all speaks to, you know, what you were saying is placing the level of empowerment based on the role, based on the employee, and based on the actual cost of the product or service at hand, too.
Yeah, absolutely. Exactly. And that's, if you just try to take fear out of it, ask what can go wrong, but just don't be like, and try to, you know, part of this is a leadership question. Part of it is, do you like your team? Are you a leader who has a very negative, you know, if you're one of those negative leaders, you're going to have a hard time empowering your team. You have to trust your team to do it. And you have to train. There's two things I'll add for empowerment really quickly. One, you have to train your team. This is where we circle back to the training. You can't just say you have the power to do something and not give them the tools to know how to use it. And there's a second thing that people get wrong, particularly, and I had this in my own retail experience, when if you're coming from a command and control type environment, culture, and you're trying to open up, you're trying to be more customer-centric, there is a difference between actual empowerment and psychological empowerment. This is actually in the academic literature as well. So actual empowerment is what we're talking about. You can, you know, you're empowered to do more or give more or whatever. Psychological empowerment is, do you feel empowered? Do you feel the, like, the ability to use the actual empowerment? And if you have been banging on people for 10 years and have a culture of don't do this, don't give away, don't do anything, don't expect to just put out a memo and say, okay, everybody can refund customers up to $50 or whatever it may be and expect they're going to do it. It's going to be a process. It's going to, you really need to let them feel safe. When somebody does something, you know, maybe you wouldn't have done, you don't eat their lunch for it, right? You have a coaching, say, okay, I probably would have handled it this way, but you support them and make them feel psychologically empowered as well.
Gotcha. And I think when employees feel psychologically empowered, whether there's a customer issue or not, when they feel empowered, they're going to deliver even better service as individual employees.
Oh, of course. That's a great point. Because what happens is, I mean, who likes being limited in life? Who likes rules? I mean, some of us follow rules, but who likes them? Nobody likes them.
No.
And particularly if they're making your life hard.
Yes.
Right. The rule, I mean, it's fine. I get some rules. Okay. I'll put on my seatbelt. I actually like that rule because I know there's a good reason for it. But some rules just make our lives difficult and they're annoying. And when that happens at work, nobody, it affects, there's some good, you know, research showing a relationship between empowerment and engagement with employees, empowerment and experience. And I mean, it really does impact the employee experience as much as it impacts the customer experience, truly.
I think that we like to have some appropriate level of, whether you call them rules or boundaries or guidelines, you have some guardrails that you know that you can work in.
Oh, of course. I think, you know, for me, anything that's liability.
Yeah.
Right. So if somebody, it's like one of those things was, if somebody ever mentions the word lawyer or lawsuit or anything like that, right? Oh, I slipped, I hurt my knee, whatever it may be, right? Okay, you don't give them a refund, that goes to management automatically,
yeah.
Right? So there are certain things you can put in place that just came to mind, but right, there's absolutely some guidelines and some hard rules you can put in place that say, okay, look, here's the range, which is going to cover 95% probably of what happens.
Yeah.
And here's the times when, you know what, be a little careful, maybe get your supervisor's feedback, or here's the hard lines. You know, they, as soon as somebody says lawyer, conversation's over, that goes up the chain, whatever it may be, right?
Yeah. And so hopefully having that would then help the employee feel even like that much more psychologically empowered, psychologically safe in their decisions. Like if you have no rules, then you might have some employees that are like, I don't know what to do that because I don't have any rules. So I'm not going to do anything.
Right. Well, that's where you sort of get into that reality-based kind of like risk-reward idea. Like that's where a lot of people just talk about empowerment as like the birds are going to sing and all that. Well, a more reality-based approach, to your point, actually is more empowering because they're going to know this is different. Like this person's really... this is a different thing. I don't think I should be, I need my manager, right?
Yeah.
They're going to know it instinctively. And it's sort of good to tell them, okay, yeah, here's some situations where, yeah, you know what? Want to take a step back. Let's bring in the next team.
Yeah.
And I'll let you off the hook.
Yeah. You are welcome to rest and fall back on these guardrails. So exactly. Feel safe in that.
Yeah. It's beautiful. Exactly.
Cool. Well, one thing I do want to cover, because we talked about, you know, being able to prevent customer issues from coming up, but customer challenges are going to come up. And you know me, I love simplifying processes. And you've created a pretty simple process for employees to follow when customer issues do come up. And it sounds like it's just three steps, the 3S process. Can you walk through that?
Absolutely. So I had this process before, and actually, if you get Beer Customers, if anybody gets Beer Customers Hero, I actually had the CATER process, CATER, because you know all of us speaker types have to have some kind of like acronym and process. And what I realized, focusing on the psychology and emotion, both of our customers and of ourselves, is that nobody remembers that stuff. Nobody's going to remember when the heat's on and someone's yelling at them, concentrate, acknowledge, thank, right? They're just not going to remember that.
Right.
Exactly. So I was like, you know, what works in the real world? What can people actually use? So I created the 3S service process, which sounds like, okay, well, you went from 5 steps to 3, but not really. It's actually really 2 things you have to remember. So the first one is soothe the psyche. And that's what we've been talking. Yeah. Psyche is a fancy word for the mind. So, because I needed, you know, the alliteration of the S's, of course.
That's it.
But soothe the psyche means exactly what we're talking about. Address the emotion. So what we tend to do, what frontline reps tend to do, is we know the answer. We've jumped in, you know, we've handled this problem 100 times in our career. So we jump in with la, 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 trying to explain because we don't want them to keep yelling.
Right.
We don't want them to keep complaining. We don't like that. It is not fun for us. So we're trying to, tell you what, I'm going to soothe the psyche. What does that mean? That means resolve the emotion before or along with the second step, solve the screw up. Now, we may not have actually screwed up, but they think we have.
Yeah.
In the end, if there's a problem, if we're having to do reactive customer service, there is a screw up either in their minds or actually that has happened.
So, from their perspective, the brand screwed up.
Exactly. So what is happening is we're trying to resolve the operational issue. We have an answer and we want to fix their problem. If we fix their problem, they will be happy.
Yeah.
But if you listen, which is very important in customer service, if you actually listen to what they're saying, you may find that the problem was that their shipment didn't get delivered and they didn't have the shoes for their daughter's wedding that was 2 days later. Or you may find out how they were treated for the 2 days that they tried to get the shoes. And now it's not even about the shoes. It's about how they were treated. And they're really upset because they've been a customer of yours for 10 years and they have been hung, you know, they've been ignored, they've been abandoned, they've been treated rudely, they've been dismissed. And what do you think? If you send them the shoes, they're going to like you now?
I mean, that doesn't solve the problem.
Right, because the problem is now their emotion.
Exactly.
So, soothe the psyche, number one. Solve the screw-up, number two. And those are not necessarily steps. They generally are steps, but they can be happening at the same time.
Yeah.
Of course, in a fluid conversation. And the third one happens after the fact. So, it's not even a part of it. You only have to remember those two things. The last one is set up the success. And that is what we often refer to in our industry as closing the loop.
Yes.
Checking back in with them. Setting up that success for later, because you may find a few things. One, you didn't even resolve the operational issue. You thought you did. The warehouse never even sent the shoes again.
Yeah.
Right. But more importantly, that they're still upset, that even though you solved the operational issue, they still have lingering emotions. And that follow-up and that check-in and that opportunity to have another conversation is what can help you go back and make sure that you truly have soothed the psyche. So that's it. Three S's: soothe the psyche, solve the screw up, and set up the success.
Bam, there you go. And when it comes to closing the loop, I think a lot of brands fail on that last step right there.
It's the hardest thing to do. It's the hardest thing for me, and I teach this stuff. All right? It is. Yeah. I don't have upset customers generally, but follow up after, you know, I've got a job that's in front of me. I've got a speech that's in front of me, following up with the speech I gave 4 months ago.
Right.
It's hard to do. It is not easy. I think that is something that's actually easier for big companies, because you can truly systematize it better. You usually have the systems to make it more automatic, to put in some triggers and things like that. But it is, you are right, it is where most companies fail, and I understand why.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I'm the same way. I'm hard with the follow-up too. But yeah, if you systematize it, have the right systems in place to do it, it certainly helps.
100%.
All right. Well, Adam, last question for you. If you were to create a 5-song soundtrack for Be Your Customer's Hero, what songs would you include?
I pulled it up here because it's too hard to remember this stuff. All right. So this is the coolest question ever. I'm a musician. I showed you my guitars before we got on the line.
I love it.
Not only that, I didn't even tell you this. I grew up in the music industry, so I love this. I listen to almost every genre. All right. Nice. So first one, because we've been talking about hassle and friction, is Take It Easy by the Eagles.
Oh, yeah. There you go.
Right? That's hassle-free. I actually used to play that song in an acoustic duo back in the day. Now, next one you could think of, like, because we talk about emotion and all of that, you could think maybe Sweet Emotion or Emotion by the Bee Gees, but I am actually going with Feeling Good by Nina Simone.
Ooh, nice.
One, I love that song, and two, it just really speaks. All right, third one, because we have talked about empowerment, and I knew we would be talking about empowerment, is Freedom by Jimi Hendrix. Most people don't know this Hendrix song. Wow. So Freedom was off his last album, The Cry of Love, last official album. They put out a million since he died.
Right.
And not to get into music criticism, because we're doing a CX podcast, but it's a very underrated album and really shows some interesting growth as to where he might have gone if he had lived. So Freedom by Jimi Hendrix.
Love it.
Okay. Next one is solely for the title, because there are no words. it's just the title. Giant Steps by John Coltrane, one of my favorite songs and artists.
Oh,
and here's why.
Nice.
Here's why. Because, you know, when we talk about these changes and culture and all of these things, sometimes you can't be incremental about it. Sometimes you do need to take bold leaps, like empowerment. We saw this with the pandemic. Companies had to say, oh, well, we're doing digital transformation. Oh, no, we're doing our 5-year plan in 5 months now.
Yeah.
Right? Sometimes you do have to take giant steps and bold leaps. So I am doing Giant Steps from John Coltrane as number four. And of course, it's pretty easy. I'm going to point in the right direction this time. Hero by the Foo Fighters.
Oh, yes. My hero. Love
My hero. It. Yeah, exactly.
Very cool. Yeah,
That is a great question. I love that.
Thanks. Well, you know, that just helps me, like, when I'm thinking through different experiences and lessons, be like, well, what are some cool songs that might apply here? And now I know, but this is the first time that I've had, I think, any kind of jazz song, you know, much less John Coltrane. So love that. Nice. Very cool.
Sweet.
Excellent. Well, awesome. I've learned a lot from talking with you today. I've learned a lot from your book, but where can people go to learn more?
Well, would love to connect with anybody who's listening. Customers.stick.com, that is home base. You can find me and connect with me there. Of course, I'm on the socials, LinkedIn, Twitter, and then Instagram. I am Adam DePork, CX. Very important to put the CX at the end. And love to connect with anybody.
Excellent. Thank you. Well, thank you so much for your time today.
Thanks, Matt. I appreciate it. It was fun.
I hope you enjoyed my discussion with Adam DePork. You can go and learn more from him at customersthatstick.com. You'll find Adam's book there along with lots of resources and some really inspiring customer experience stories, all to help your team deliver hero-worthy experiences. And whether it's hiring Adam for keynotes, bringing him in to train your team, or providing customer experience consulting, you'll find a number of ways for Adam to help your brand level up. And if you're enjoying the Simple Brand podcast, go ahead and hit the subscribe button because it's going to make it so much simpler for you to get future episodes like the next one featuring Joe Moll. Joe's an international keynote speaker. He's the founder of the Boss Better Leadership Academy, and he's the host of the Boss Better Now podcast. And Joe's latest book comes out on May 9th, Employloyalty: How to Ignite Commitment and Keep Top Talent in the New Age of Work. Employloyalty is already getting so much buzz and great reviews, and I've had a chance to read it as well. Thanks, Joe. Trust me when I say that if you're a leader who wants to learn how to recruit, retain, and reinvigorate the best employees, you'll definitely want to go ahead and pre-order his book. Joe and I discuss his lessons from Employloyalty all around attracting and keeping top talent. And we walk through Joe's simple framework that helps you create the kind of employee experience that leads people to join a company, stay long-term, and do great work. So go ahead and subscribe. You'll automatically get Joe's episode as soon as it's live. Until then, keep it simple.